The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
I got one thing to read before we bring on our guest here. I got two cats at home. You know, I like to take care of them. So Pets Life, the company that we've been partnered with, is a Minnesota pet care company that has created an oral care product for your cat or dog that is 100% natural, 100% safe, and 100% guaranteed to improve, your pet's oral health. Save hundreds in vet bills and improve your pet's health by visiting PetsLife.com. That's PetsLife.com. Enter the promo code OMAHA, as in the second part of Cold Omaha, and save 20% on every online order. Or mention OMAHA for 20% off any phone order. That's PetsLife.com, spelled with a Z. PetsLife.com. All right, we're back here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. Cold Omaha is also on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. We got Tom Schreier behind the glass touching up the keys today. Tom, how are we doing?
Doing well. Excited.
Yeah, so it's going to have a lot of fun here today. We thank you for joining us and listening to us on iTunes, Libsyn, Stitcher, Google Play. However you're getting us, we really do appreciate that. Feel free to give us a review on iTunes if you are able. If you like the show, if you don't, feel free to reach out to me, your host, Brandon Warren, at Brandon_Warren on Twitter, because we'd love to hear what we can do better or what you like that we're doing so far. Have a really fun show planned today, as we've got MLBPA agent and baseball prospectus columnist Josh Kuznick on. Josh, how's it going?
Good. Busy. You know me.
Yeah, well, and this time of year, I suspect, maybe there's not a downtime for you, but I suspect this is probably a fairly busy time for you.
Yeah, it's crazy. There really isn't a downtime when you're an agent. It's just one thing after the other, and you're just pushing towards different dates. So for me, it's just a year-long calendar worth of work. So right now we're in the finishing up winter ball, six-year free agents, big league free agents phase, and planning for the winter meetings. So that's where I'm at now.
So what's the next big date for you then?
The winter meetings, probably, or whenever any of my six-year guys get signed.
And how many? Who are some of your bigger six-year guys this year?
All but one has big league time. the one who does not have big league time is a bigger name. Jeremy Bleich, the former lefty, the former pitcher from Stanford.
Sure.
And the Yankees, former supplemental first rounder. Cody Decker got a month in the big leagues and his second in active home run leaders for the minor leagues. So we're exploring a bunch of different options for Cody. Mm-hmm. Jim Miller, who has a year of big league time with the Yankees, the A's, the Orioles.
Yeah, relief pitcher, right?
Yeah, righty reliever. Jay Chapman, who has big league time with the Cubs. He was with the Brewers the last 2 years, got traded to Tampa, and just been what's out there right now. And the biggest name I would say is Josh Vitters, the former number three overall pick, who signed for several million dollars and got to the big leagues and is trying to make his way back now out of indie ball.
Now, the biggest names that you represent, Seth Lugo, Jeremy Jeffress, I believe Adrian Nieto, and then Michael Brantley, who everybody knows about. Am I missing anybody that's that big?
Carlos Asuaje.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Asuaje, who I believe got a cup of coffee this past season, right?
He did. He's a special guy, man. He's been one of my all-time favorite clients to work with. I mean, everybody has, you have your own relationship with each different guy, but you try real hard not to play favorites, but just with Carlos's beaten, always being told he was 5'8", always being told he was 165 pounds, and always saying every level he was at, the numbers weren't going to hold up. And then now he's in the big leagues. So he's a guy that I believed in from day one. And it's been really cool to see that, and really not at all dissimilar to my relationship with Seth Lugo, who, same thing, 34th round pick, debilitating back injury, always kind of talked about as an org guy, which I thought was insane. Mm-hmm. And, this year he helped save the Mets.
Yeah, I should have known more about Asuahe. I have him in score sheet. Very exciting year. Again, I hate to play the fantasy angle. I don't want it to sound like I think of him as...
I'm not allowed to play fantasy baseball or daily fantasy. It is actually banned by the agent rules now.
That's a good idea, to be honest with you. Not that I think that guys wouldn't have integrity, but at the same time, too, you know, I think you probably have to have a clean break there. But Asuahe had a really nice year in the PCL, and so I was really rooting for him, you know, and I'm a little surprised I hadn't picked up that you were his agent, but here we are. Speaking of clients, what's the update on Michael Brantley? How's he doing?
He's good. He's you know, he's physically, you know, on track, and you know, he's just working his way through all of his stuff in Arizona, and just trying to get back on track for spring training.
How did he handle watching Cleveland do what they did this year, and knowing, you know, I think he probably was chomping at the bit to be out there. Did he handle it well?
Seemingly. That's not something I really ever wanted to bring up. So
sure, that makes sense.
He seems fine. I mean, he was a groomsman at my wedding. He's one of my best friends. I love Mike, and this was a very, very hard year, and trying to get ready for next year and beyond.
So let's roll back a little bit to maybe in your younger days. How did you grow to love the game of baseball? I mean, was it your first love, or did you like different sports first? You know, what was your kind of coming of age in the game?
I grew up in South Florida, and we didn't have a baseball team, but we always had spring training. So as a really young kid, I remember my first memories of baseball being the 86 World Series with Buckner, and being a Mets fan and loving RBI baseball and playing with, you know, Daryl Strawberry and Fernando Valenzuela and the National League All-Star team. And I always play my dad in it, and I became a really big Orioles fan from spending so much time there when I was younger. Mm-hmm. And just being the biggest Cal Ripken fan. I actually was their bat boy in spring training a couple times and got to be around the club that I grew up rooting for. And then when I was 11, the Marlins came into existence, and I became a Marlins fan, you know, as a 11-year-old, and was at the very first game.
Were you a big Charlie Huff fan?
I remember the game vividly. I just remember everyone booing Daryl Strawberry, and Charlie Huff just knuckleballing everything.
Barbary and Orestes Estrada, and that was
Chuck Carr.
I love Chucky Carr.
Yeah, but I got a trivia question for you.
Sure.
Do you know who the first hitter in Marlins, who the first plate appearance was in Marlins history? It was It was not Chuck Carr.
Brett Barbary?
Nope. Chuck Carr was injured. This is one of those horrible questions. You're like, you got to be kidding me.
So it was somebody who played center field then?
Yeah, you'll never get this. This is something only someone from Florida or a baseball nerd would get.
Give me initials. I might be able to get it.
SP.
Scott Pose.
It was Scott Pose.
Or Pose. I don't know. I was an extreme baseball geek. Well, was. I still am. But, you know, I was really into the entire league in 93, 94. Like that, so yeah, I loved the Rockies
awesome.
and the Marlins.
Yeah, what's funny is Scott Pose is coaching in North Carolina somewhere. I think high school baseball, USA Baseball, and I remember maybe 10 years ago I went to go see USA Baseball play. Or I'm sorry, it was in 07, so yeah, like almost 10 years ago. and I remember like right behind me was Scott Pose, and I'd never been more nervous in my life. And it was like, wait, I've met hundreds of famous people. No one here but me recognizes this guy. And I freaked out, and I didn't get to say hi to him because I was too nervous.
Oh, that's amazing. Yeah, it's funny how a deal like that where, you know, you're not really sure how to handle yourself around somebody like that can totally just ruin your psyche. I was trying to think of it.
It's just funny. I mean, you know, I mean, you put me in a room with literally anybody. I mean, there was one time, literally after the winter meetings, I went to Epcot with my wife. I went to Universal Studios with my wife. No, went to MGM Studios with my wife, and they were doing the filming down like all the different streets. And my wife and I ran into Hank Azaria, and
I
got to talk baseball with him. And he gave my card to his agent who was there, and then they reached out to me, and they want to put Butch Agross on his show Brockmire on Netflix or on Funny or Die. And it's like, wait, so I just randomly saw Hank Azaria, and now I'm getting someone I know a TV show out of it. It's like, this is not normal.
Is Hank Azaria a big baseball fan?
Huge baseball fan.
Really? I wasn't aware of that. Obviously a very talented guy.
He has a show right now where he is an announcer in like the 40s or 50s era, and it's called Brockmire. And, you know, Rosenthal's been on the show. Like tons of people have been on it. And, I mean, Hank Azaria is a big, big time baseball fan. If you want to talk like surreal moments, though, I'm a huge movie nerd, and then I'll get back to the other sport question too, because I like covering that. But with Hank Azaria, during that whole thing, during film shoot, the cameraman was there, and I recognized the cameraman from something, and it bothered me for like hours in the park, and it hit me. It was like a guy who plays like small roles in movies, and the guy who was hitting on Ben Stiller's wife in Zoolander, who offered her like the half life of cantaloupe. Mm-hmm. And I was confused that, A, why was he holding a camera, and why did I recognize him? And later in the day, we ran into him again, just him, and I talked to him, and I was like, he was like, I don't know how you recognize me. I'm like, I don't either.
That's amazing.
So yeah, I've got some weird random encounters. I mean, my wife and I, a couple years ago, went to a Dodger game, and like in the airport waiting, there was a little Pomeranian in a hoodie, and my wife's like, well, the little dog's in the hoodie. I'm like, who the hell would do that? I turn around, and it's CeeLo Green.
Oh, God. Yeah, that makes sense. I've heard Pat Sajak is a regular at Dodgers games too. I think Jason Bateman. So there's no shortage of people you could see around that club.
John C. McGinley from Scrubs and Office Space is also a huge baseball fan.
Oh, that's amazing. I like finding out that people like baseball. It seems like a great unifying factor, and I think it's just because it is the perfect game. And, you know, I never say that on Twitter because I don't really have the energy to make that argument. But at the same time, too, it's like if you're down 10-3 in the ninth, there's no sitting on the clock. Every pitch has to be 90 miles per hour. They're not throwing at 78, you know, to conserve energy for later. It's, this pitch has to be perfectly executed or for the, you know, at least relative to how the average human would execute it. It has to be executed
absolutely.
Perfectly.
And, you know, getting back what you said, you know, so growing up, I stopped with the Marlins Scott Pose thing. But I, after that, I just really was a Marlin fan. I've actually been to every single Marlin playoff game in their history.
Nice.
Still.
So you were at the Eric Gregg game.
Yeah, I was. And I was also at the Roger Clemens throwing at a 20-year-old Miguel Cabrera's head game, the next pitch he homered.
Oh, man, Miguel was skinny back then. I was watching a replay of that a few years ago, and I took a picture and tweeted it. And it was skinny Miggy, and holy smokes, he looks like a totally different guy.
He was one of the first guys, I'll fast forward to it. But I started getting autographs, when I was 14, really, at West Palm Beach Expos Stadium, mm-hmm. Where the Braves and the Expos had spring trainings for years before they demolished it and moved to Jupiter. So I started going to those games. In the very first year, I started going to minor league games to get autographs with my dad. That was the year Vladimir Guerrero was on the team.
Wow.
And it's like, I picked a good year.
Yeah.
And I really just got into all of the prospecting stuff that year. I called every minor league team in the country that I could find their phone numbers, like pre-high-speed internet, you know, using AOL, and I would buy minor league team sets from every team in the country that I could. And, you know, that's really how I got into prospecting. And then when I was about – 18 or 19, Cliff Lee and Brandon Phillips were on the Jupiter Hammerheads, and I was getting a ton of autographs, and I really was, like, getting curious about becoming an agent, and I always had to ask in high school what I needed to do to become an agent, and I couldn't get a clear answer, so what I started to do was I would buy as many cards as I could of a certain minor league player. So, for instance, I have 100 baseball cards signed by Miguel Cabrera. On
wow.
The flip side, I also have 500 cards signed by Jeff Getz. So, like, that's the trade-off.
Yeah.
So, but the reason I did that is so I could talk to the players longer. So some guys would sign literally everything and just, you know, this is almost before eBay, I think, even. And the guys would just sit there and sign everything and just, you know, I even offered one guy, I'm like, hey, man, I bought 500 cards. You guy, he was former first-rounder, a guy named Mark Mangum. And I bought 500-card lot of him for $10, like, directly from the company. I'm like, dude, I don't need all these. I'm sure your family would love them. You know, just sign whatever you want. You can keep literally all of them. And the next day, a guy comes back and hands me 500 signed cards. I was like, Jesus Christ, man, thank you.
That's awesome.
And but I always would speak to these guys about becoming, you know, like, how do I become an agent? What does your agent do? Talk to the players' wives and families and just kind of chew on their ear. And there was one guy before I became an agent who had asked me to help him. I said, my dad's a lawyer. And you know, we're thinking about, you know, starting an agency. And the guy had big league time, a guy named Scott Forrester, I think that, yeah, that's exactly what it was. And he was back in A-ball trying to bounce back, and he said he needed help. And I ended up not doing anything because I didn't know what the hell to do. And then finally, I think it was 02 or 03. I still never remember which year it was that I got started. But a guy who pitched for the St. Louis Cardinals named Carmen Cali.
He was in the Twins system for a while.
Yeah, Carmen, same guy. So he was my very, very first client. And I'm a diehard hockey fan. Love hockey.
Wow.
Diehard. I played my whole life. I had a scholarship to play D1 in college. I did not accept because I did not want to go to a small school. So I went to Florida State instead. And plus, I'm 5'7 and was never going to play in the NHL regardless of my skill level. But no, I loved hockey. I miss it. I was a goalie. I haven't played in years, but I loved it, and I'm a diehard hockey fan to this day. I'm a bigger fan, like day to day, statistically, you know, stuff like that, of hockey than I am anything else. Because baseball stuff, even though I know far more about that, that's mostly business. I mean, I have to know that for work. So you lose a lot of that fandom in this job, almost all of it. You appreciate the game for what it is, but cheering for teams, I haven't done that since my early 20s, so it's inconsequential to me, you know, who wins and loses, as long as my guys are happy and everything, and the game's doing well. But you know, outcomes and stuff like that, I don't check box scores to see how a team's doing if I don't have anything to do with that team at that time, or if there isn't a need, or, you know, if it isn't relevant to what I'm doing or could be doing, there's just no interest. As with hockey, you know, I check my Panther scores, like, religiously.
I was going to ask you which team it was.
Oh, yeah, I'm a diehard Panther fan. They got me into playing hockey. I mean, when they came, all the leagues popped up here, and you know, Bettman's plan of the Rust Belt, you know, having hockey seems crazy. And in some markets it's failed, you know, like Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you look at the NHL now, probably the best, you know, young player in the league besides Connor McDavid is Austin Matthews. And he was born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona.
Isn't that amazing?
It's crazy.
His first game was incredible, too. I mean, the hype machine was out of control.
He's ridiculous. He's Eric Lindros 2.0. I love watching
it.
That guy. But yeah, I mean, I grew up in that same era. Nobody from that first era made it to the NHL or professional levels. But I think now there are more guys kind of filtering into the NHL from Florida, which is insane to me. I remember the Panthers third rounder a few years ago. I think his name was Andrew Yogan. And the guy literally played like hockey his whole life at the rink by my house. And ended up being a third round pick. And it's like, how did that kid become that guy? And, you know, kind of the parallel in baseball. And I know you read the story, or I think you did, but my client, Tim Lynch, is a kid that I met at Roger Dean Stadium when he was like 12, while he was getting my other client's autographs. And then flash forward 10 years, and now I'm that kid's agent.
Isn't that like the Todd Frazier, Derek Jeter picture? You know, the.
Yeah, isn't that weird, though? Like, that's so weird. Well, and I think I told the story to somebody else this week, but it's worth repeating.
Sure.
The hurricane that was just in Florida, you know, the impact of it was like 15 miles. Like, the main impact was 15 miles from where I live, right by the Mets spring training facility. And my wife's a big video game fan. I don't play video games anymore beyond a couple on my phone and Pokemon, which is awesome. And
I hear you there.
I'm sorry?
I hear you there. I played it when my brothers had the game on Game Boy, and so I haven't since, but I understand how addicting it is.
It's addicting and wonderful, and I've lost actually 20 pounds playing the game.
So that's amazing.
Technically a weight loss app, but the...
Take that, Fitbit.
But so my wife and I go to GameStop so she can put a pre-order down for Gears of War, which she's obsessed with and literally plays my clients in it, like, which is still weird to me.
That's awesome.
But she plays Gears of War like half my minor league clients. It's awesome. But anyway, we're at the GameStop, and three prospects were there for the Mets because it was obviously during instructs, and I think the guys were just either bunkering down or leaving town. And it was one kid drafted this year, one of their top five pitching prospects, and another kid who got $1 million this past June from the Mets. And I start talking to all of them, the first two guys had agents, and somehow the other kid didn't have an agent. And his name's Cameron Plank. He's a righty. He went in the 11th round. He got $1 million plus and didn't have an agent, which blew my mind.
Wow.
And, yeah, he hired me. So had I not gone to GameStop, I would have never met that kid, which is weird as hell.
That's amazing. It's kind of funny. Actually, I grew up in Roseau, Minnesota, so hockey's in my blood as well. I never played, but, you know, you come from Roseau, you have to. My next-door neighbor actually played for the Florida Panthers for a brief stretch. His name was Josh Olson. He scored on his first.
Oh my God! Are you serious?
Yeah, he scored on his first NHL.
Wait. I have a serious story. This is awesome. This is so weird, and this is gonna be a cool story on air. One of my friends, who is a diehard Panther fan, has been trying to get Josh Olson's autograph for the last 10 years and can't find him.
Oh, I can find it. Yeah, I know exactly where he lives.
Now you have to hook my friend up with this because that's amazing.
I can totally do that. Yeah, we played town ball together. In fact, one time he had come back after that year, and so I was playing first base and he was pitching. A guy that size throws like 92, and I was playing first base. A right-handed hitter was hitting, and I knew if the baseball was hit to me, it was going to be right down the line because you can't catch up with that. And the guy literally hit a line drive that I never saw, but somehow caught. And that was like one of the scariest things of my life. And so it was funny that that's like my one memory. And the funny thing was, I was like 19 at the time. And so he had this really nice, like, tricked out Chevy Trailblazer. And so since I was 19, you know, obviously I couldn't drink. The guys would drink, and they would bring me like Diet Pepsi to drink on the way back from games. So I was like the DD for all these older guys.
Oh, that's awesome. I mean, that's crazy. That is such a small world. My friend is a passionate hockey fan and a big autograph collector, and I mean, he's one of my best friends, and he's got a list of like 3 or 4 players that he's been looking for years, and he writes them letters like from the Czech Republic, like he found Martin Straka. And no, the guy's great. And literally one of like the guys, cause he's literally trying to get a collection of one autograph. Like he doesn't send 10 things. Like he just wants one autograph of anybody who's ever put on a Panthers uniform. So Olson's one of the guys on his list.
I can easily get that for him.
I cannot believe that like, even when I was a kid and Olson was up, I couldn't get his autograph because he was only up for a little while. Then they made his cards and then you never saw him again. He was a big prospect for the Panthers for a while. I vividly remember him.
He's a monster-sized guy, 6'6", 240 or something like that. And so,
I remember I went to a game he played in. I vividly remember him. He was always one of those guys that was supposed to be a guy, and it just never clicked. And then the game changed, and guys like him kind of got phased out.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of guys, I mean, you know the drill. I mean, yeah. You can't skate in this NHL. You're screwed.
Well, and so you mentioned Atlanta, too. Dustin Byfuglien went to my high school. He plays for the Jets now, but
he's a freak of nature. That was a pretty good 7th-round pick by Chicago.
Oh my gosh! And the funny thing was, he never played a single shift for Roseau. Like Roseau is the program in Minnesota. I mean, I'm a little biased, but it's the school with like 300 and some odd kids from 9 to 12, and they face teams that have 3 times that many kids per class. They come down to state and just clean up most of the time. And so,
my high school, I went to American Heritage. And, you know, that's where Eric Hosmer, Devin Marrero, Adrian Nieto, Juan Carlos Silveron, Nick Castellanos, Nick Trevieso. I mean, that place churns out big leaguers.
Well, and so it was funny. You mentioned RBI Baseball in 1986. Have you ever seen the mashup that they did with that game calling that last inning on YouTube?
No, but I will now.
I'm going to send it to you on Twitter. It's amazing. So what happened was that last inning, starting with, I think it's Wally Backman at the plate, they coordinated Vin Scully's call of that entire inning with it being played on RBI Baseball, and it's one of the coolest videos you'll ever see. I'll have to send it to you, but that was what reminded me. It was funny that you mentioned those two things in coordination with each other, 1986 and RBI Baseball, because I think that's the preeminent baseball game that kind of transcends generations. You know, everybody likes MVP 05 or 04, whichever you prefer. MLB The Show is really great.
I prefer the 04.
But the lefty glitch bothered me because you couldn't hit home runs with Joe Mauer. Again, maybe that was...
I remember that vividly.
Maybe that's foreshadowing that you couldn't hit home runs with Joe Mauer. But
the best baseball game of all time was World Series Baseball for Dreamcast. It was my favorite baseball game of all time.
With Pedro Martinez on the front?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I got that one. That one I used to play. I'd come home from football practice. We had 8 to noon practice, and I could barely walk afterwards. So I'd lay down on the air conditioning and just play for like 3 hours in a row. And
it was my favorite game of all time.
What ticked me off, though, was you couldn't sign your free agents before they hit the market. It bugged me so much.
Oh, that was so bad. I remember that. And then they had the draft. That was terrible.
Yeah.
But I remember my best friend, who was the best man at my wedding, he was staying at my house for a few months right after high school. And, we would play that game every day. He's a diehard Yankee fan. And he originally helped me write the biographies for my clients on my original website. And it's just funny in retrospect because the 18-year-olds he was writing for are guys on the Yankees now. So he's still tripped out by that. But one day we were playing. I was the Marlins. He was the power Yankees, you know, like the dream team Yankees. And I threw a perfect game with Josh Beckett against him. And I still, to this 13 years, whatever it's been later, I still remind him of that often.
I threw my first perfect game, or it may have been just a no-no recently on MLB The Show, and it was with Phil Hughes, which is funny because Phil and I have got a good relationship.
That's funny.
Haven't had a chance to tell him yet. I'm not sure that he would care as much. But
hilarious, and I've done this before. I created a dynasty 1 year with all my clients, and it was like very not position-friendly because I represent mostly pitchers, so I didn't do very well that year in the video game.
That's how it goes. So what would you be doing if you weren't an agent, you know, as I kind of veer us a little back on track, but not too much?
Oh, no, yeah, let's get back on track because I ramble.
I do, too.
But, no, I would be a stand-up comedian.
And I was going to ask you about that. Are you still doing that? Are you still having time to do that?
No, not at all. I have no time for it. I haven't done it in 4 years. It breaks my heart every day because I love writing. And I still write jokes. I was not the nice comic. I said some pretty terrible and offensive things, but... in the name of comedy.
Michael Richards terrible, or like...
Oh, no. I've never messed up or done something stupid. I like more cerebral comedy, like Greg Giraldo. I would say, even though I don't like his comedy at all, but more of the same topics as like an Anthony Jeselnik, even though, I'm not a huge fan of his.
Well, I'll have to hit you up for recommendations on Spotify because I kind of went through all the, you know, the run-of-the-mill guys and need a little
Hannibal
bit.
Burris. Hannibal
I love
Burris.
Hannibal. I'm a 30 Rock fan. I'm a big 30 Rock fan, and he appears as a number of different characters towards the end of the run of that show, but he's absolutely hilarious.
Hannibal Burris, I just saw him a month or two ago with my wife in Fort Lauderdale, and he told one joke right after the Heat lost Dwayne Wade. He's from Chicago, Hannibal.
Oh, that's awesome.
He was saying, he's like, y'all must be pissed at Pat Riley, and he's just yelling at the audience, and he wasn't like a tool about it or anything. He's funny. He's like, thanks for giving us Dwayne Wade in his prime years of 35, 36, and 37. God damn. It was just really funny.
Oh, man, that's awesome. So becoming an agent, though, I mean, you know, did you do anything for a job between, you know, being done with school and becoming an agent to kind of get you to that point? Like, or were you just, hey,
kind
I'm
of,
agent.
I was an agent while I was in school. It was a very weird situation. I actually notified the athletic director of the school just in case there was any appearance of conflict of interest just covering myself being a student and an agent. I think they more along the lines took it back then as like, oh, okay, sure. And, kind of dismissed it. And I ended up, actually, one of my classmates who made it to the big leagues, I was his agent. I met him in class. So, that was cool. Didn't last very long. It was a cup of coffee, but still cool. Somebody I went to class with became his agent, got to the big leagues. But no, I did some scouting work with one, big league team and, very low level number crunching stuff that could easily be found on Fangraphs or BP right now. And, but before those sites existed, you had to do it by hand, and I did for one team, and crunch draft numbers and all that stuff, and kind of learned how to scout by going to as many games as I could. That's really the best experience I ever got, was getting autographs and going to baseball card shows. It sounds weird, but I really learned how to be an agent, like the foundation for it, the young years, by going to minor league games and just watching and learning from the scouts. So instead of just having a good time or just getting autographs like my friends at the time did. Those people are still getting autographs, which that's fine. That's just not what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And I used it as an opportunity to kind of get my foot in the door, and that's what I did with a lot of help. But I just went to a lot of games and just sat with scouts, and that got my foot in the door.
Well, and I think, too, you know, people will say, a lot of people I talk to in the game, yeah, I didn't have a typical path, and it seems kind of funny. Honestly, the more you talk to people in the game, I think you find out that there really probably isn't a typical path anymore, or if there ever was. I feel like everyone takes kind of a strange road to wherever they're getting.
Yeah, it's not the standard, you know, oh, did you go to law school? It's like, I don't ever get that question anymore, so... There are former players who are agents. There are lawyers who are agents. There are people like me who are agents. So, you know, it is what it is. So, I even said this I say this to everybody who I want to work for. You know, I'm not for everybody. And if they're looking for a certain set of things and I don't check those boxes, then don't hire me. So, you know, there are worse things, you know, after 13 years of doing this, there are worse things than not getting hired. You know, some stick out that really still piss me off, but those are few and far between these days, thank God.
What's the formal process, and how difficult is it to become an agent? I mean, you know, from beginning to end, you know, what were the processes for you to...
It's different. It's different for me because the rules are changed now.
Sure.
So I don't know what the process is anymore. But when I did it, it was simply... Do you go to college? Do you have a guy on the 40 man? All right, cool. To answer these questions, and now you're an agent.
Wow.
So it's much, much harder now. I know they offer a test you have to take that's offered twice a year. And if you miss one of those two dates, they don't reschedule it. You have to wait till the next one. So you better be there. So I know there's that. And I know you have to do a full background check on someone. And God, what else is there? There's a huge fee. And, you know, for the initial payment to finance all of it. And, there's one other thing that's real. Oh, right. If you don't have a 40-man guy for three consecutive years, they revoke your certification.
Wow.
And that's good because that means inactive agents who have, you know, let's say been certified for 20 years and then don't have anyone for 10, there's no reason to keep them around. Now, if they get
like voting for the Hall of Fame.
I'm sorry?
Kind of like voting for the Hall of Fame, the guys that haven't written about the game forever.
Oh, right. The exact same principle. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's not a bad idea. With that being said, it's, you know, anything to protect the players is a good thing, you know, with the agent regulations. You know, they're there to protect the players, not us agents.
How did you come into writing columns for Baseball Prospectus? Like, what was your in with them?
Kevin Goldstein hired me.
Yeah,
Kevin and I were friends for a long time.
I worked with him when I was an intern there.
Yeah, Kevin KG has been one of my friends. I spoke to him yesterday. Kevin's one of my good friends, and back in like 2009, 2008, he asked me if I wanted to write a column. I'm sorry?
That's exactly when I started. I started in, I think, August of 2008. I'm mistaken. I was August of 2010 because I graduated in 2010. But KG was still there as the top prospect guy.
Right. Yeah, that same time frame. So we overlapped a little bit, but the initial column only ran like six columns.
Six seasons in a movie?
Yeah, exactly. It got six columns, and it was awkwardly edited, and I didn't really find my voice there, and I had blogged for years. My blog's still out there from like 2005. I mean, there's old entries that are really interesting. I haven't gone through them. I'm sure I've said terrible things on
there. I'm going to have to dig that up.
It's interesting chronicling the early years of my career at how bad I was at my job. So
I have that dynamic too, though, honestly.
But that sucks. It's a bad feeling. It's funny because I could just delete it, but I'd rather leave it there. I don't want to hide anything. So, you know, I like the blog a lot, and Kevin saw it and asked me to write for BP, and that's how I started doing it. And then I just stopped doing it for a while. And then 4 years ago, I came back. I met with Joe Hamrahy at the winter meetings a couple years in a row, and I know Joe pretty well.
Good
and,
guy.
Yeah, very good guy. And I was like lobbying for the in Orlando. I'm like, can I have my column back? And the next year he caved in and gave it to me. And I like the guy a lot, but I wanted to murder him as an editor, Ben Lindbergh.
I know what you mean.
I love Ben, but God, was he hard on me. I was unhappy, you know, not unhappy. That's the wrong word, but it was different. And then Sam Miller came in, and good Lord, is he the greatest editor on planet Earth, and writer. And he was the only person that was ever able to kind of channel, all of my cluttered thoughts into a coherent column. And without him, I the column wouldn't have become what it became. And, unfortunately for me, Sam's at ESPN now, and I've only written one column since he's been gone. So I don't know. It's up in the air what I'm going to do. If I'm going to stick around at BP, which is my intention, or jump ship, go somewhere else.
Yeah, Sam does a good job of making everyone feel inferior, even though that's not his.
No, Sam's awesome.
He's unbelievable.
I've never gotten that from him.
That's how good he is. That's how good he is.
His work is just so unbelievable. There are columns that I've turned into him that I thought, like, this sounds great, you know, because I'm not a terrible writer, and I was really proud of him. And then Sam just touches it up, and even if it's changing, like, a couple things or rearranging it, it's like, well, that was much better than what I thought of.
His best article, if you ask me, is the one where he says Mark Reynolds is blind. And again, I'm trying to learn not to be inflammatory about players, but it's...
I'm not. I can't be. I never would.
Right.
It's different for you. I'm not in that position. So, like, if I ever do, like, a BP chat, not even inflammatory, I won't speak about other people unless I represent them.
Right, and that's probably for the best. But the article about Mark Reynolds is incredible. He just gets a bunch of GIFs of plays where he looks like he's legitimately blind and just kind of...
That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's absolutely brilliant.
I'm sure hopefully he laughed at it if he saw it. Most guys have a pretty good sense of humor with stuff like that. Me as a writer, moonlighting as a writer, I'm fortunate because I can cover things, unfortunately, a lot of people don't get to experience, so I don't mind sharing that at all. I like it being inclusive with stuff like that and not making everyone feel like such an outsider, but also, as you remember vividly, I feel warranted in saying that I played a large role in killing the teen journalism reporter trend, which I'm so happy.
Just about
I did
to ask you about that. I was going to ask, are you still waging war with the transaction monkeys?
Yeah, God, occasionally, but nothing like that wonderful winter meetings of San Diego. Oh my God, when that was at a fever pitch, that's when that article came out, and. Every reporter, guys I've never met, came up to me at the winter meetings and were like, Jesus, that was the best article written all year. And it's like, you guys are not doing a good job if that's true.
It's so discouraging, though. Like, I don't think the kids understood, like, hey, if you're doing this job when you're 14, there's going to be nobody to pay you to do it when you're 24 or 25. Like, there's no reason to pay you because you've just proven that it's not a real job.
Correct. And I don't know if you remember this, but do you remember what I'm going to ask. Do you remember what precipitated me writing that article?
Was it the Jake Wesley thing?
No. That was just funny.
Oh, no. Well, I'm sure there's a number of things.
The main thing that precipitated actually was Ben Lindbergh, my old editor's article that he wrote for Grantland that I happened to read because I never liked Grantland all that much, mm-hmm. short of a few columns.
Yeah.
But there was a headline that said, "Is Twitter the new J School?" By Ben Lindbergh, and I read it and nearly had a meltdown, and I grabbed my computer and wrote my article, and then my article ended up being better than Ben's. So,
that's awesome. That whole stretch was just unbelievable. I'm glad that.
By the way, to answer that question, is Twitter the new journalism school? No.
A flat no.
No, it is not.
Well, I'm glad that you've decided to fight the good fight there.
I'm going to keep doing it. And as you know this, I in his early years nurtured Chris Cotillo, and I like Chris very much. But I've had to slap him around a few times verbally and just be like, dude, you are so much better than this. Like, Chris is an interesting case study of that whole phenomenon to see if he can turn his following into an actual base of readers, and hopefully he, you know, matures into a reader because he works really hard and he knows people, and I think he's got a real chance to do good work. But besides him, nobody out of that whole group that I can recall right now, besides Chris, impressed me all that much. And what's unfortunate for Chris is he made some mistakes along the way, as anybody in his position at his age would have done. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying they're going to haunt him, but they're always going to be there, and they're very public. And I personally, I don't know how one deals with something like that, given my age.
Yeah, the whole thing is just, it's just kind of stunning to me. Like, I don't understand that part. I'm still trying to figure out how sources work. And so it's just like, how do you become someone people tell stuff to? And then how do you turn that into something more than just a 400-word story that you drum up real fast for a ton of clicks? I just, that doesn't resonate to me as journalism. And so I...
Well, a pro scouting director asked me at the winter meetings during this whole phenomenon, when the fever pitch was, at its fever pitch, like I'd said, with the Jake Westley fiasco,
yeah.
Jake Westley in finger quotes, pro scouting director says, "Hey Josh, do you remember when the Angels signed Albert Pujols?" And I said, "Yeah, of course. It was like 2 years ago." And he goes, "Do you remember who broke that story?" And I go, "No." And he goes, "Yeah, neither do I." No one cares.
No, not at all.
And that was the big thing back then, is, and even now to a degree, is, there are people that have said, I'd rather be first than be right. And, it's insane to me that's a thing in baseball.
I think you're only
and
big.
All journalism yeah. At this point now.
I think you're only as big as your next scoop anyway, or you're only as good as your next one. And that's a very unfulfilling life.
Yeah, I didn't even think of it that way. That's unfortunate. That seems like somebody just sitting there playing blackjack all day and hoping they don't run out of money before they hit blackjack again.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's about right. So what is your typical day like? I think there's probably a Jerry Maguire view of what agents are like, and then I'm sure there's a very, very different different layout. And I'm sure your day is different than, Bean String Fellow or Scott Boras or anybody else. But what's your typical day like? And if it contrasts, let me know how it evolves throughout the course.
I'm on the phone a lot. I work from home. I abolished the office system, an actual satellite office system a while ago, and I've pared down to no employees. I just started using an intern, so to speak, but he's been. I've known him for a year now. I met him at the winter meetings last year. Just love the guy. He's going to make a very good agent one day. Hopefully with me, if I can afford him, but he's been terrific. But, short of that, I'm on the phone a lot, whether it's with players, teams, given the time of year or vendors, trying to figure out marketing stuff and just really lots of phone work and going to games during the season and then the off season, twice as much phone work. And, this year, especially doing arbitration prep stuff with the Players Association and coordinating with them, about my arbitration eligible players and just dealing with trade rumors and players, if they have business questions, set them up with different people and, or not set up, so to speak, but, at least introduce them to the people I know. And if they want to hire them, great. If not, then they don't have to. So, I really, my agency, the way that it differs, I think, from a lot is I literally only am in charge of baseball stuff. Anything that branches from baseball, whether it's your contract or a marketing opportunity, I just deal with the baseball stuff. I have nothing to do with their investments. I don't touch their money. Mm-hmm. I just deal with baseball. So I think that's different than a lot of the big companies. And then obviously not having 100 clients, like I did at my absolute apex of size back in like 2006, I had over 100 players, and maintenance on that was just absolutely impossible. So I keep it around 20 at this point, and I'll have 5 guys in the big leagues next year. So, it's good. Everything's good. And that's kind of the way that that's the way I work. I'm just really on the phone a lot. It's really boring, to watch, but while I'm doing it, I'm certainly not bored by any of it. I love my job. So, I know how fortunate I am, and I'm grateful for the people I get to work for.
What's your elevator pitch when you try to get hired? Like, what is your style? If you're talking to somebody who doesn't have an agent?
Hands off, pressure wise, I don't do the high volume sales pitch. I literally just lay out what the reality is. Like, this is a fact. Here's what the information is. I'd rather you be well-informed. Go interview 10 agents, and then if you like me, great. If not, don't worry about it.
If guys are with an agency but looking for someone else, how difficult is that to tiptoe and handle?
That sucks.
Do you intentionally stay away from that until they're out of an agency, or is it kind of a necessary evil because a player can't be not covered for
It's a necessary evil. Yeah. I'm not going to lie. I've never lied about that. It's not part of the job I like. I don't actively recruit people who have agents. That is not something I do. And I alluded to it with that Mets story at GameStop, where the other two guys who were 18 and 20 both said they had agents. It's like, well, you don't need me. Yeah. So I didn't bother talking to them, even though literally one of them is a top five pitching prospect for the Mets, and I would die to sign a guy like that.
But he
told me who his agent was. I know the work that the guy does. I may not like him personally, but I'm not going to start trying to steal his guys. Certainly, I doubt that person feels the same way about me and would love to take my players, but I don't need to do that. But if a guy is pissed off at his agent and I meet with him and there is like alarm and a reason to, it's like one of those moments where you're kind of happy you're getting a player. But at the same time, like there's one guy who had his agent for 11 years and I had to help him because the guy literally gave up on helping him. And it was like, God damn it, man. I got to take a guy who's been with his agent for 11 years. That is awful. And, it's not part of the job I like. I'll never like it, and I get no satisfaction from it. And fortunately, I have I have a good enough rapport with a group of agencies, bigger and smaller, where we all just leave our guys alone. I mean, it's weird. It sounds like governing, but if certain players are represented by certain agents, and I happen to know them, and we have a good rapport, then I won't touch that guy, and that guy definitely will not touch my guy. So. Mm-hmm. I have that relationship with a bunch of groups, and then there's a bunch of groups that don't have that rapport with me, and that's what it is.
It's kind of a delicate situation, but how does your job change when guys like Jeremy Jeffress are dealing with stuff off the field? Do you have to change up your approach with them, or is it just kind of business as usual?
To get hired?
No. Now that you're representing Jeremy, you had some difficulties this year off the field. Does anything change for you? As far as their representation, or do you just kind of stay out of things that happen?
No, I take all that over. I'm actually, that's one of my niches is I solve problems. So
that's gotta be kind of nice.
Yeah. I mean, you heard the free agent list this year. I mean, I didn't start out with Decker, Vitters, Donovan Hand, Jay Chapman. Well, Jay Chapman, I started out with, but then he fired me and came back, which is, that's a fun story for another day. But all those guys migrated to me because if they got released or went to indie ball, like Josh Vitters, for instance, I don't know who their previous representation was, but, a guy like Vitters, 25, 26 years old, goes to indie ball and his agent stops talking to him. It's like, well, that's terrible. So
it's Bush League.
Yeah. So, and it's funny. You're more likely to hear that story from a bigger agency. Than you would a small-time agency. It's just anecdotal, but I hear that more often. And that's why, you remember when they were in their prime years, a guy like Bleich or Decker or, whoever, mm-hmm. They were not represented by me during those years, unfortunately for me. But, it's part of the job, and it is what it is.
So with the winter meetings coming up, what's preparation for that like, and what are the meetings like, as somebody who's still working their way up in the business, and winter meetings is kind of a target to eventually get to go to. I think a lot of people have conceptions of what it's like or preconceived notions, and then I think it's probably a very different reality, just a free-for-all and a situation where it's, very little sleep and tons of information coming out. What's it like for you, and do you enjoy it, or is it just part of the slog for you?
Yeah, I'm okay with – it is what it is. I mean, it's work, but, you see your friends, I hate that I'm listing that first, but you see a lot of people you don't get to see during the year. So it's nice that every club, is in one roof, so that's a big thing, but you get a lot of work done in a very short amount of time. And it's because everybody's in one place. So all your stuff with the teams can be done in one day. As an agent, you go to the trade show and then you can do all your marketing stuff on another day. And then on another day, you deal with the media, and then the last day, you go to the Rule 5 draft and go home. So it's regimented. I mean, it's very tightly regimented while I'm there. So, Nashville is the one I do not enjoy, and it is pure hell on earth, and I say nothing good about having to go to the winter meetings in Nashville.
Isn't that where everybody gets sick?
It's just hell on earth. And you know what's terrible? Opryland Hotel is freaking gorgeous and an awesome place if I was there with my wife. But for the winter meetings, it is hell on earth. No one likes it. It's a mile long. There's nothing near each other. You don't run into anybody. And there's like 10 different room numbers that have the same room depending on what wing you're in. So if you have to meet with Nike in room 1025, there could be 10 room 1025, and you will always miss that meeting. So it's hell on earth. Now, Orlando, which they're phasing out for some reason, is my favorite because not only is it close to where I live, it is all condensed and everybody is stuck slamming into each other. So I like the Orlando one. I know we're going to D.C. for the first time this year, and I wish we weren't, but we are. So I will report on that eventually because I do my yearly winter meetings column for BP, which even though I am taking my hiatus right now through January, I still may do the winter meetings article just to keep up tradition. But it's crazy. It is just such a free-for-all. And I can't imagine wanting to work in baseball and not going to the winter meetings if you're serious about it. If you, you know, are going to school and you want to work in baseball and you just, you know, do all the right things and then you don't go to the winter meetings and you don't have an in anywhere else, you're screwed. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, but if you don't go there, you don't really have a chance to meet anybody. And I think the people that are smart that go there, you know, for the job fair and whatnot, they take advantage of not only like the interview process, which, you know, every kid comes there wearing a suit. Every kid looks exactly the same. There's hundreds of them and they all go to the same seminars and they all do the same stuff. And, you know, the smart ones tend to drift away from that flock and take advantage of being around all these baseball people and chatting with them off the clock. And those are the guys that are impressive. And to talk about the kid who, the nice young man who is, he's married, who's interning for me. I met him at the winter meetings last year. I had posted on Twitter I wanted an intern last year for one specific job. Like, it was not a long-term thing. It was just like, do this one thing and that'll be cool. I mean, I needed help with it. It wasn't anything major. It had to do with indie ball, and I needed help with it, and I just wanted somebody to do that for me. And it was basically just making phone calls. That was all it was. You know, here's a list, make phone calls, let me know what they say. That was it. And I met with a bunch of kids, and some were really, really smart. I mean, some were, I mean, Ivy League smart, like much smarter than I was. and you know, new analytics cold and stuff I struggled to learn, but, you know, got there. But, I mean, these kids were half my age and just knew, you know, I mean, 18 years old was one of them. But anyway, Corey's there, and his name's Corey. I probably should have mentioned that earlier. You know, he's walking around. You know, he had emailed me his resume like everybody else. And just a word of advice to anyone, I actually don't read anyone's resume. I don't even open them, so please don't send them to me. You know, if you send me a nice note, I'll be happy to read it, but I don't care about your resume at all. At all. So, you know, seriously, even if it said, unless it said like Harvard Law School, you know, analytics expert, then I don't care about your resume. Man, I went to Florida State, and if I sent my resume to someone, no one would have hired me. But at that time, so my thing is I met Corey, and I got a nice note from him like everybody else, and I said I'd meet him at the winter meetings, and I did, and we went somewhere to talk, and I was with somebody, and I don't remember who I was with. Somebody in the media, but anyway, long story short, the kid's wearing or the guy's wearing jeans, dress shirt, and I asked him where his credential and his suit was, and he goes, yeah, I kind of just crashed the winter meetings and didn't sign up for all that stuff. I'm like, you're hired right now. And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you don't have to interview anymore. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, you literally crashed the winter meetings. You already have beaten everyone else I've met with this week. And
it's like punk rock, man.
Oh, man, he was hired literally on the spot. The interview lasted a minute, I swear to God. And one day he'll tell you. But he was phenomenal at the one job. And then during the year, you know, he was looking to get hired somewhere full-time, and he definitely deserves it at some point, you know, whether it's me or elsewhere, preferably me, as I've said. But he's been terrific for me and doing a real good job with everything he's doing. But he'd emailed me during the year saying, hey, I think I'm going to get a job somewhere else. I just wanted to let you know, even though it was informal and we only did the one thing. I'm like, oh, I appreciate it. No problem. You know, anything you need, let me know. And then about 4 months later, I'd emailed him because I was cleaning out my inbox. I'm like, oh, I haven't heard from Corey. You know, I wonder how his job's going. And I emailed him and it didn't work out, unfortunately, for him. And I'm like, if you're not doing anything and you're bored, you know, I need help with X, Y. Well, I don't need help, but, you know, I certainly have things I wouldn't mind getting help with, you know, on your end for a couple things if you're interested. And he's like, yeah, absolutely. And he's been doing it for about a month and a half, and it's been awesome.
So your guy, Aswahe, was traded almost exactly a year ago to the Padres organization in the Kimbrel trade. What does the trade, you know, do for you, or what do you have to do when a guy is traded? Does it change really anything, or is it just kind of, hey, the guy packs up and moves? You know, especially now, I guess, in the minor leagues, it's probably a little different because guys move around quite a bit. But when a guy is traded, is there much in terms of maintenance for you on that front?
Yeah, there's some. It depends if it's in the off season or not, or during the season. But that's why I got dealt while I was at the winter meetings, and I found out first, which is not common, but I called him and let him know. And yeah, I think we found out at the same time. Like, he'd gotten called by the club, and and they let him know, and I called him, and we were just talking about it. And you know, he loves everything that Boston did for him. You know, I mean, they did a lot for him, and granted, he earned all of it, but you know, they really helped develop him for sure. And and you know, but we looked at the trade as like, oh my god, this is amazing. You're finally out of, you know, the depth chart hell they had at the time. Was, you know, he was behind Cecchini and Marrero and Sean Coyle. So, I mean,
which is nothing to say of the guy at the top.
I'm sorry?
Which is nothing to say of the guy at the top. That's kind of good, too.
Well, it was just a numbers thing, like with Boston, because they have so much depth, or they always have so much depth. And when he got traded in a Craig Kimbrel type trade, you know, that kind of shoots him up the depth chart. And I knew he was going to perform. I mean, he's one guy you always know is going to perform. And he historically he has. And I'm excited to see it in the big leagues next year. And but with Los, he was excited. You know, he was excited to get away from that kind of, you know, potential of, I mean, if he was with Boston, he probably would have gone back to Double A last year. And because of the trade, he got to go to the Futures game. So in Triple A. So he, you know, it was a great thing for him. And then, you know, with Jeremy, it was a very tough thing this year because obviously he loves the city of Milwaukee and everything they've done to support him over the years. And, you know, at the same time, yeah, and he was, you know, on pace to be an all-star this year. I still think he should have been. He had 27 of 28 saves at the time of the trade. And, you know, at the same time, though, it was exciting because he went to the Texas Rangers, or, you know, had a chance to win the World Series this year. So there was a lot of stuff we had to do when he got to Texas, you know, finding him the apartment, which he was able to do, and just getting all of his equipment stuff sent there, his car shipped, you know, all that stuff that, you know, you make sure that he's on top of it. And if he needs you to assist in any way, he can always call.
How many games per year do you get to, and are they mostly big leagues or minor leagues?
Mostly minor leagues. I live in walking distance from the field in Port St. Lucie, so I'm going. Nice. I mean, during the year, I go to a game every day.
So you'll get to see a lot of Tim Tebow this coming year. I'm just kidding, man. I'm sorry.
Read my article?
I haven't gotten a chance to, but I
no, I went nuclear about that signing, and as I said, now I get to contradict myself. I don't comment about other people's clients and then ... except for Tim Tebow.
No.
And I went nuclear on a BP article. It was the last one Sam had edited, so it's really good. And then if you go to the comment section, which for some reason no one comments anymore, but at the very bottom, someone wrote a comment that was longer than my article.
Oh, jeez.
And the whole premise of my article was arguing that I could make a successful argument that Chris Winkie was better at football and baseball than Tim Tebow.
Oh my gosh! Yeah, he was an All-State, like Lions All-Star in 1989 in Minnesota. And
yeah, but would you agree that he was better at baseball than Tebow?
Easily, I don't think there's any question about it.
Okay, now hear me out here. Both of them won a Heisman. Both of them won a national championship. But one of them played in the NFL for 10 years, and it wasn't Tim Tebow.
It's true. And what I can understand, too, if Tebow had stayed in the NFL, he might have had to move to, like, tight end, too. you know, sure. There was no question where Wehnke was going to play.
Right. And I've made this argument, and anyone who loves Tim Tebow immediately wants to kill me.
Yeah, well, screw him. You can't win those people over.
And plus, it's Florida State, so it's an even better argument.
Oh, my God. So how many nights per year do you get to sleep in your own bed at home? I mean, are you home a lot or not really?
No. I don't want to say that. Ever since we moved to Port St. Lucie, I've been home a lot more. So, you know, it's easy access for the Florida State League and spring training. So it's been good. I don't know how much longer I'm going to stay up here. I moved up here to be closer to Michael, you know, during his contract year. So I live about 3 miles from his house. But I stayed up here. And because of that, I was able to go to an Instructs game one day. An extended spring training game one day in 2013, and I saw Seth Lugo pitch. And then right when I'm thinking about moving, I go to a GameStop and get $1 million 18-year-old. So it's like, well, maybe I should stay here.
Yeah, it's just, maybe somebody's trying to tell you something here.
Yeah, no kidding. It's weird. Also, going back to Tim Lynch from before, he signed baseball card deals with Panini and Topps, and in December, his first baseball card is coming out, and it's in the exact same set that he was collecting to get autographed that I met him getting.
Wow, that's pretty awesome.
I know, it's like Inception. It's very weird.
What? So last thing I got for you before we let you go, because we've kept you way longer than I
thought. No, it's fine. I love these.
What's been your biggest professional thrill as an agent?
I was at Roy Halladay's perfect game. If for non-clients, I was at Roy Halladay's perfect game, and that was insane. And to witness that as an agent, I got to go, you know, in the tunnel by the player family area, and I'm waiting there for my client, David Herndon, who's retired now because of injuries, unfortunately. But I'm there, like, firsthand to witness history. So that was cool. Years ago, Darren Ford won the World Series. But, I mean,
you know, it's
professional
the Giants, right?
Thrill. You know, with the Giants, but the biggest thrill, I mean, it sounds redundant and easy, but it's the same every year. It's whenever a guy makes his major league debut is the best moment of my career, other than when they get a contract. And it was so cool to see Asuaje and Lugo, who played against each other in the minors in Double-A, and I actually have a picture in my office of the two of them while Lugo's tagging out Asuaje at third on a pickoff. And and it's signed by both guys, and it's so cool. I got to go to both of those debuts this year, and then you know, I've been to almost every big league client I have. I've been to their major league debuts, and like over my career, and that's always the best feeling. But short of that, like guys playing in the playoffs and stuff like that, it's always a cool thing. And I haven't had a player win an individual award yet, which is ridiculous to me, but. You know, it is what it is. Oh, but to fit in one more, Brantley, his first career All-Star game was Derek Jeter's last All-Star game.
And where was that at?
Minnesota.
I'm just messing.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so I was there for that, and I have this picture that's all, like, foggy and terrible because it was a terrible camera phone, and it was like a rush moment, but I leaned over and took a picture of Michael and Derek Jeter hugging in the dugout. That came out great, except for, you know, like the image would have been great if I had a better camera, but that was a cool moment. And then, you know, I know it's personal and cheesy, but Brantley being a groomsman at my wedding was cool and literally surreal for everybody but me and my wife, because we know Mike as Mike and, you know, Jeremy is Jeremy. So I don't look at those guys the same way you do. I still remember, you know, giving Mike hell before his first, like, his first spring training, I went there. I'm like, how does it feel to have the same amount of home runs as your agent in your career? And then goes out in the first pitch of the game, homers. And then 4 years later, we're in Tampa, and it was like the second year of his career in the big leagues. And I said, how does it feel to have the same amount of career home runs in the big leagues as your agent? And he freaking led off the game with a homer. And I was at Michael's first big league game that he homered in, which I'm like, all right, that's probably the coolest thing that happened.
Oh, man, that's fantastic. Well, I want to thank you for giving us an hour of your time. Had a lot of fun, and hopefully we can have you on again real soon.
Yeah, anytime you want. This went better than the Up and In podcast I did 6 years ago, so I'm thrilled.
Now, this is Josh Kuznick, MLBPA agent, baseball prospectus columnist, and all-around great guy. I really enjoy having you on. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.